Welcome to this episode of Dial the Cosmos with me, your host, Dominic J. Zenden. On this episode, we're going to talk about consciousness and the power that you can actually gain from being in control of your conscious thoughts. But what are thoughts and where do thoughts come from? A couple of really interesting topics to discuss. Before I start, I'm just going to introduce myself a little bit more to those who haven't heard me. I'm Dominic J. Zenden. I work as an aura photographic profiler. I'm a paranormal expert, a writer, a columnist. I have a website which is dominiczenden.info. If you want anything of what I do, if you want me to write you a profile, if you want to actually invite me onto your podcast, or if you just want to have a chat, come and talk to me at dominiczenden.info. Fill out the form and you'll be straight in touch, and I promise to get back to you. Now, today's topic of consciousness. Consciousness is something that we should all be aware of. We all have our own thoughts. We all have a degree of understanding our own thoughts. Sometimes we have thoughts that we don't even know where they've come from. And other times the thoughts that we have can lead us in the wrong direction. So what creates a thought? Where do we start with how we think? Does it come from inside of us? Does it come from outside? Do we pick it from the atmosphere? Or are they planted into our bodies, into our mind while sleeping? Or can we just think anything we want to think as long as we have the knowledge to think it? Well, the way that I look at it is consciousness plus words equals thoughts. So if you're conscious and you can speak, then you can share your thoughts. Now, that's why man has developed the way that we've developed, because we can write things down for the next generation to be able to follow the instructions to do the same things as we're doing, or maybe avoid some of the mistakes that we've made. It's no longer a word of mouth, since we had the written word, the printing press, and mass manufacture of things like books, newspapers, videos, and now podcasts. We can communicate what we're thinking almost anywhere in the world. And it's just about being able to articulate how those thoughts are built. So what motivates us to start thinking? And I think that the human consciousness loves a mystery. If something doesn't quite make sense, it's never that difficult, is it, to let go? It's really hard to let go of that particular situation. We want to solve it. I think that's probably why Sherlock Holmes became such a phenomenon back at the early 19th century, because the mysteries that were written were compelling for people to try to resolve. And I think that's why we do so much of our thinking, is to figure out who we are, where we've come from, why we are here, all the questions that we may not really ever be able to find the answers to. But as we actually try and figure them out, they create more questions. So our mind is constantly active, trying to figure something out. Now, for me, my thought process is always about what is the next thing to discover? What's the next new knowledge? Where can we actually discover that? And I've looked at several areas to try to figure out where that may come from. The first area that I looked at was mediumship. If we can communicate with people that are past, then surely they may have a different dynamic on the things that we're coping with ourselves. There's nothing new that we don't really discover that easily. So maybe mediumship is a key to talking to consciousness of people that have passed before us, and that they may help us solve or understand the problems in a different way. I'm not sure that worked. Okay. I think that part of that would have been very difficult to pick up, because I don't personally, having looked at that, believe that mediums have conversations with people that have passed. I think we can pick up soul links. I think we can pick up soul communication, which is passing on knowledge and facts and bits that maybe that people have come to understand in their lives. But the stuff that I'm really interested in is the stuff we don't know. And because I know it's a sort of an anomaly that the things that we don't know, we don't know. But being introduced to something for the very first time is so exciting, isn't it? It's a bit like the other day when I was looking at some photographs of some creatures in the wood, and it looked to me like they've been able to cloak themselves, so they're able to literally become invisible. Now, we don't really accept that because in our world, we haven't gone into too much detail about what that may actually represent. Because if there are creatures that can cloak themselves that are invisible to our sight or our spectrum of sight, then the whole view of this world is going to change. It's going to alter. So, can you see that the stuff that we don't know has an implication on the stuff that we already know? Invisible entities would actually explain ghosts. It could explain a lot of things like teleportation, things that move without us understanding why. There's lots of explanations wrapped around that understanding that if a creature can or is able, or an entity is able to make themselves invisible, then we have that as an explanation to maybe explain the poltergeist or an entity trapped in a house that's throwing stuff around. All this stuff could actually explain why we never see or have ever come across a dead Bigfoot. You know, the Sasquatch in Alaska and in America, Northern California, we haven't come across any remains. Well, maybe that's something that is very hard to come across remains of an animal that we wouldn't recognize. But if they can cloak themselves, even if we did come across the remains, we wouldn't recognize them in the first place. So it's a sort of side shuffle into that thing about, well, let's feel this conversation, let's talk it through, and let's see if there's a possibility it may be so. I know that I read a story that I wrote in Angels on Our Side, which is my and Alison's first book, and that was all about a creature that somebody heard walking up to their wood cabin in Alaska, and they could hear the footprint, yeah, the footsteps going in the crispy snow, and they looked out the cabin and there was nothing there, just a line of footsteps, and they could actually see the footsteps appearing as they watched. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that quite difficult to explain. You know, footsteps don't make themselves. But if there is an entity that can cloak itself so we can't see it, the only trace you might see of that creature is the footsteps. And that could be the only way that we know that it's there. Now, that would explain that story. But does it explain the whole fundamental bit about why some of these creatures are seen and some aren't seen? Some are actually caught, you know, on camera and some aren't. It could well be that there is a phenomenon out there that doesn't allow us to participate in that spectrum. And it could be that we think because we're human, we have this little bit of arrogance about who we are, that we are superior. It might turn out that we're not. Now, that would be tough to understand, wouldn't it? I think the other phenomenon that I was interested in and have been since I was, you know, a small child is aliens. And what would stop alien, you know, spaceships being able to cloak themselves or even aliens cloaking themselves? And I've read of several occasions where aliens have just appeared out of thin air and gone and abducted people or been able to, you know, be quite a benevolent force around a person without them actually realizing that they're there. So those sort of situations come past the explanation of what we know to be true right now. And I think our consciousness struggles to deal with thoughts of those sort of happenings, those sort of, we call them paranormal, but I think they're just waiting to become normal. I don't think there is such a thing as the paranormal. I just think there's things that we don't understand in such a way. And we have to think about how can we use the power of our consciousness to improve our life. Well, the first thing that we got to think about with our own consciousness is dreams. And we spend half our life asleep. And in that half of our life, those times that we are unconscious, does our consciousness leave our body? Does it become an entity of its own that can travel wherever it wants to because there's no restrictions? Now, that's a thought that would tie into things like astral travel, into the things like remote viewing, but also orbs, because could an orb be a consciousness of a soul or of a person? Well, it may well be, and it may well be that our essence is detachable. So during our time when we're sleeping, when we're recharging our human bodies, our consciousness is a separate entity that can go and experience the things that it wants to experience. Now, there is a way we could actually test this. And if you're listening and you want to try this, why not, with someone that's close to you, have a joint dream? So before you go to sleep, arrange a place to meet. Arrange all the details of where you're going to be. And when you go to sleep, find that place, find that conscious place that you've actually had in your thoughts, and go and visit it, and go and see if the person that you've lined up to meet you there is there. It's quite an exciting prospect. I've done this a few times in my lifetime. Last time we actually decided we'd go to a house somewhere that myself and my partner both knew. And we did that, and we had a conversation over a table, which is crazy when you think about it. But it showed me that your consciousness can detach and you can both have a lucid dream. If you want to know how to have a lucid dream, that's a little bit sort of separate from your consciousness. When you're dreaming, if you have a thought that you are dreaming, find a light switch and turn the light switch on. Now, in real time, if we turn the light switch on, it takes half a fraction of a second. It's really on fast. In our thought world, in our consciousness world, it will take 7 seconds, because it takes 7 seconds for us to activate something that we're actually doing. So there's a pause. So if you don't know whether you're dreaming or not, find a light switch and turn it on. If it doesn't come on instantly, then you know you're in a thought world, in your consciousness. And that could be your key to being able to understand that once you can be aware that you're unconscious, but you're still conscious, you can go and travel wherever you want to travel. And I personally believe that this part of us allows us to fly. It allows us to remote view. It allows us to do the things that we would be constricted within the human body. Because after all, you know, a dream, let's just look at a dream. How can you see things with your eyes closed? How can you be able to fly, you know, within that normality? How could you be able to sense and feel things within that dream state? And of course, there's people out there that claim that they can taste during a dream. Now, that to me is rather indicative of those 5 senses that we look to enhance to understand how to make contact within and as a psychic. So when we're trying to develop our own psychic skills, we're looking at our taste and our sight and the way that we hear, the way that we feel. Everything within us, our 5 senses, are the things that we want to provoke. Everything within how we are, we're trying to understand those things. So once we can actually sit in a dream state, we can then know that we're eating a slice of apple pie, or we're actually sitting there talking to somebody who has a language that perhaps we might not understand in our waking world, but in our spiritual world, we can understand what they're saying to us and the validity of what they're saying. And also deeper, we could actually go into our own soul. And the chances are that our own soul has the knowledge of everything we've ever been, ever are, ever would likely to become. So we know where our soul journey is. Those things would be very, very valuable to anybody within a mortal or human life. But take it past that and think about the implications of being able to do whatever you wanted, whenever you want to. That would actually mean that we can manifest reality. The hardest thing when we can reinforce those thoughts and what happens in that state is remembering, is recalling back what has occurred. Now, some dream states can be really highly addictive. They can be, you know, easy to recall and very, very vivid and very strong. And I know lots of people that have had that sort of dream, especially after a traumatic event. Now, traumatic events that play within the consciousness can trigger, I believe, past life memories or consciousness that is actually deep down, which could well be consciousness within the soul. For some reason, the more difficult memories are nearer the surface, and they seem to be the ones that traumatic events trigger first. So let me explain this to you in a little bit more detail. If something in your life happens to you that's quite traumatic, say for instance you fall over and you have a you hurt yourself, that's quite a traumatic event. Or if someone says something to you that is not nice to hear, or there is an occasion where it's emotionally difficult, someone passes to spirit, quite often those events that are upsetting trigger a dream that next night. And those dreams that we're having are normally lucid dreams. So the dreams that we are conscious of being unconscious in. So a lucid dream is one that we remember and that is very vivid. It's one that we interact with. And so those lucid dreams can bring back things that have happened to the soul. Now, the soul, the energy source of a body, may well be able to store information like the Akashic records that we're so often told about or talked to about. Those things can be misleading because they are conjecture. They are what people believe to be so, but there is no real evidence to actually express them as being so. But lucid dreams are not conjecture. They are reality. How we place those lucid dreams into our own pathway or into our own understanding of who we actually are is a matter of understanding the actual dream itself. And some of us will wake up and dismiss that sort of dream. Others of us will think, wow, I've had contact with somebody that's just passed over. I mean, my first experience of a really partaking lucid dream was before I even knew what a lucid dream was. I was 19 and I can remember the date because it's the date my father died. He died on the 21st of December, 1980. Now, that day, when he died, that night when I went to sleep, I had a really strong lucid dream that stayed with me all these years. It's over 43 years now since I had that dream. And I can remember and I can still see the dream in vivid detail, vivid color. And the dream was within the actual structure of my relationship with my father. Now, I'm not going to go too much into detail about that relationship, but just to say it was an amicable conversation between two people that was allowed to actually happen. And the fact that it happened, it got me a little bit confused because as a youngster, I was 19, I might not be able to understand that you could that was possible. I might just think it was myself having this sort of fantasy or this wishful thinking dream that was allowing me to clear some of the emotional burden that came from having to go through and witness the passing of my father. And another part of me was really intrigued. I really wanted to understand why this was happening or where it came from. And because I had no intent, I had very little knowledge of that sort of thing then. I don't think that I induced it, but could I have actually wished for it? Well, maybe. But lucid dreaming from that point on became a part of my existence and my life. And I believe that I've recalled past existences of my soul through lucid dreaming, and then went on to explore the actual past life regressive nature of the way that we can go into our consciousness through hypnosis. Very interested in that. Very interested in the process of being able to take a different level of consciousness, but still be aware of that consciousness. So past life recall through hypnosis was something I explored in my 20s, and very interesting subject, especially when, again, you actually are bringing through the facts. And a past life regressive therapist will look at the facts. They will look at finding times, dates, factual situations, food groups, what someone was eating, what they were wearing, who the leaders were at the time. Certain things that are not common knowledge to the everyday person without having a historic sort of background. So we're looking at things that cannot be disputed, the actual factual side of stuff. Now, that was very interesting that, I mean, I've been through a few things through the hypnotic regression, and to understand it is quite fascinating. Again, the jury may be out whether it's fantasy, whether it's reality, but there's certainly some things that ring true about the way that we talk about things that we still have phobias about in this lifetime. So sometimes I believe that some of the things that we're scared of are actually born from previous life experiences. And that comes up time and time and time again when you look at other people who do past life regression and some of the stories that you hear coming out of people that have actually taken people back and explored their past. And the stories become very, very uncomplicated. They're very simple stories. They're very interesting stories, and hopefully stories that can be traced. Now, you can go online and find a number of past life regressive stories. And again, that fascinates me. But when you can look at past life regression, you can also look at future life progression. And that fascinated me even more, because future life progression, if it's a consciousness that we store and that we're in a time loop, if you like, that we have no control where we are in that time loop, or even if we do have control, there is a future and there's a past, and we just happen to be in the middle right now. But if we can go forward, surely that's better than any predictive divinational reading that you could have ever. So if someone could actually progress you forward into a future lifetime, think of the implications of what that would mean for your decision making, because you would be able to figure out where a decision is going to take you. And if it's believable for me, which it is, you have control and you have certain amount of influence over being able to change that decision. So what it basically says is that fate is in your own hands, and that where you choose to go is it's almost like a lots of little bits and pieces of thought that create consequence. Now, that may sound a little bit like, wow, I need to explore this. And I would certainly recommend that you do explore it. I've been exploring it for some time now, and I've been actually practicing as a future life progression therapist in that very guise, because I feel that any guidance that you can give someone would never come anywhere near the guidance someone could give themselves or the understanding they could give themselves. And I know that back in 2010, I did a future life progression with a journalist for a magazine. And yeah, she was a lovely lady, a nice personality, but she was skeptic, open-minded skeptic, and she just wanted to report what was going on, what was going to happen. So we put her into her hypnotic trance and got her, you know, nicely relaxed, took her forward. And we took her forward 3 months at a time. And we took her forward into a year from the date that we were doing the progression therapy. And she recalled being in a big white hotel with palm trees and looking out of that room across a courtyard into a busy city center. And she'd never, you know, she just had no sort of thought about this whatsoever. This wasn't a preconceived idea of something she read. It was a scene that she was actually picturing that we were able to document and just keep and just see where it was. Well, a year after we'd done that future life progression with her, she was called to Johannesburg to do a court case with Oscar Pistorius, the athlete who had actually committed the crime of murder against his fiance. And she'd been called to report on that particular court case. And she was able to, you know, go to South Africa and interview the mother of the lady that was shot and that was killed. And when she got to South Africa, the very hotel room that she had recalled in her future life progression was the hotel room that she was given. And she had the same view. She had the same ambience. Everything how she described it a year previously was what she witnessed. Now, that to me was very good evidence of future life progression, that certain events are going to happen. And you think of all the events that needed to happen for that to become an absolute reality. And it got me, you know, really questioning, are things already mapped out? Are they already there within the consciousness? Because those actions for someone to take someone's life, for a court case to pursue that, for the actual magazine that she was writing for to go and interview the people involved in that court case, would have been not decided until probably 3 or 4 months before she went. Now, how would she have that knowledge? So it got me questioning about the state of our consciousness, is that are events already lined up for us? And if they are, can we avoid them through being able to understand those events through a dream state? In this situation, she could no way avoid what was happening because she wasn't a part of the events. She was just reporting on the events. But just to say that if your life is actually going through difficulty or going through a time where you're not sure about your future, well, future life progression can help you avoid going through some of the more negative sides of recovery or understanding what's happening with you, or even giving you some sort of understanding that you're making the right choices and decisions. And I think it's a very useful tool. It takes away all the guesswork, and it makes me wonder, right, very closely about fate and whether fate is quite what it actually is without the actual side of it that we think that we're just living random lives on a random timeline, because our consciousness says differently. It actually says that there are certain events that we may be not able to avoid if we don't know about them. The key is to know about them. So if we choose to avoid them, we can. And it may be that we all have dreams that take us into these areas of things that we might not want to recall, or if we recall them, they may help us avoid making some of the mistakes that don't allow us to move on in our life or put us through a traumatic event that doesn't give us the right path into that next part of our life. Because every action that we take has a reaction. Every friend that we make, everything that we say, every word that we utter, every time that we have something that may influence another person or have an effect on somebody else's life, sometimes we can't redo those things, not in this lifetime. And if we could avoid hurting others or ourselves, then we may want to take this more seriously. But until we've done more research on it, it's just that idea that it works. Even though this journalist that we regressed is a firm believer, and there's nothing better for me than actually giving somebody the understanding of something through personal experience that makes them believe in a situation that they may have seen quite difficult to believe before that really actually happened. So that's future life progression. I think there's a couple of other parts of our consciousness that need to be indicatively looked at. Ingall Swann, a very interesting man. He's known as the grandfather of remote viewing. Somebody that can give a remote viewer a coordinates on a map, and that remote viewer can tune into those coordinates and actually picture what's there. Well and good. You know, that sounds very feasible. And I know that the American CIA were very interested in this sort of, shall we say, absent spying? Because I think that it is absent spying in some way. So there's little danger in being able to go into a consciousness and being able to travel somewhere and have a look to see what's there. I don't know if that would ever be something that I would want to do personally. It must be quite scary being put into a place where you don't really know what may be going on there, especially when you read about some of these people talking about alien bases or, you know, experiments that are going on deep in, you know, underground bunkers, or that there's things that are happening on the moon, you know, because they talk about there being a moon base there where already that they're storing up and keeping active watch on the cosmos for our own safety. There's a space fleet. So all that stuff would have been in Ingall Swann's domain with the remote viewers that were able to spy remotely on other nations' activities. And the implications that if you could do this stuff, you're free to go wherever you want to go. You just need to work out the coordinates and then being able to pick it out or to figure it out. I think the same with astral travel. I don't think there's a lot of difference between remote viewing and astral travel. Astral travel is more explainable within the realm of people wanting to go into a meditative state and go and visit certain locations. Visualization meditation, always very useful if you ever want to go inside and use a visualization meditation. I can send you one if you haven't got one already. The connotations of that is that it occupies your thoughts while your thoughts take you somewhere else. Now, you know, for me, that meditation works every single time. And I use a scent, a smell trigger to get me into that meditation. It's a bit like if you smell grass, it takes you back to your childhood. When I smell eucalyptus, it takes me into my meditation where I can drift away into that thought process that I've already set up. Now, whether that's real or whether that's just having a well-trained consciousness, or whether that consciousness is ready to be trained and work with you in order for you to escape the reality of where we are in this world, is something that maybe we want to debate. But I certainly believe that we can use our consciousness for us in order to escape the reality of our lives here, or even if we want to go and visit other places. Now, that might be classed by Ingall Swann as remote viewing. For me, I think it's good to have a quiet place where you don't have to think too much about how to reach it, because it puts you in a calmer state. And if we're in calm states, if we're in states of consciousness that allow us to express things in a calm way, I think we work better as people. I don't think we work on heightened emotions or difficult emotional situations. I think that's when life becomes difficult for us to cope and make choices. The calmer we're able to stay, the better decisions that we can make, the easier life becomes, the better person that we are. And it's that sort of cascade knock-on effect between being able to do something that is able to control some of the things that we're wanting to understand and take us into other places where maybe we might discover things that we're yet to understand. And that new knowledge, if we come back round to that new knowledge, has always been a quest for me. I've not really been too much into people that channel. You know, I'm open. I love to see people channeling information, but I want to see them channeling new knowledge and new understandings of new situations. And I'm sure that there are people out there that can do that. I want to be able to connect to other life through consciousness. I'm absolutely sure the shaman in South America and in the Amazon talk about a drug called ayahuasca, which is a root and a leaf that takes them into a different dimension and where they can travel. It's a bit like a dream that you actually induce by this root and this leaf called ayahuasca. And the beauty of ayahuasca is that when you finish that one section of your dream, it's actually saved, and you go back into the dream at the same place the next time you take ayahuasca. So you continue the journey. Now, some of the shaman talk about this ayahuasca as being a wonder drug that was given to them by the gods, because who would have ever thought of putting a root and a leaf together to create that effect on the human mind? Well, maybe that we've known that knowledge for all time. Maybe it's old knowledge. Maybe it's something that we quite happily understand as being something passed down by the ancestors. But the shaman talk about it in a way that it was a gift to man from the skies, from the gods. And who's to say that extraterrestrials don't have a lot larger knowledge of physiology and drugs and all the things that would change and ultimately alter the whole mindset of the way that we think and the way that we gather knowledge and the things that we know now. It may just change all of that perception. It may just alter it out of total knowledge that we've had ever before. But because it's an old thing that's come into a modern day, we actually question the process. But it's well worth examining if you're interested into going on inner journeys or using your consciousness for you to be able to understand a little bit more about the complex nature of who you really are. Until next time, this is me, Dominic J. Zenden, for Dial the Cosmos, saying take care of one another. And if you want to get in touch with the show, if you have any questions you want to ask me here, get in touch. You can contact me via the contact page at the bottom of this podcast on your podcast provider. You can leave me a comment. You can sign up. You can actually become somebody who's subscribes to our podcast, which a lot of people have already done throughout the world. But if you're new to Dial the Cosmos, welcome, and go look through the archives, because we have many interesting subjects with many interesting people talking about subjects that have always fascinated me throughout my time. Until next time, take care of one another, and I will see you then. Bye-bye for now.